Welcome once again to The Word on the Hills with your hosts Felicity Signal-Reed and Gwyn Sheltimer. Each week at this time, we'll visit with one of the region's many talented writers. You'll get to know a little about the writers and their writing lives. You'll learn about what they write and why they write it. And you'll hear them read their work. Today, we're delighted to have as our guest, Shane Joseph. Shane began writing as a teenager living in Sri Lanka and has never stopped. His works include novels Redemption in Paradise, After the Flood, The Ulysses Man, and short story collections Fringe Dwellers and Paradise Revisited. His stories and articles have appeared in several Canadian anthologies and literary journals around the world, and he blogs at www.shanejoseph.com. Welcome, Shane.
Nice to be here.
Like so many Canadian writers, you're not Canadian-born. What effect does coming from another country have on your writing?
Well, I think it gives me what a lot of writers would like to have, is that outsider's perspective. It's not a comfortable feeling sometimes to be the outsider, but you also become the observer, and I think that's important for writing. And so having come from the outside and having to observe and then play has sort of conditioned me to being the writer I have become. So I think it, you know, you can view it in several ways. I'm trying to view it as a plus, that you know, the outsider, the observer, is all conditioned by having come from the outside.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Your latest novel, Ulysses Man, however, is set in Canada. At which point did you feel comfortable writing in a Canadian setting?
That's a very good question. I mean, I guess one could start writing about any setting after you've landed in the place for a few hours. But the depth to which you'll write about that setting will vary. You know, I've written lots of travel-related articles on my various travels. I've set stories in Chile, in Cuba, in various other places. But those are very surface stories because I haven't lived there long enough. And when I wanted to write about Canada, which is my home, I had to make sure that I had been here for several years. I've been here now for over 26 years. I think I've earned the right to write about Canada. My children grew up here. So I started writing about Canada, I think, about 7 years ago. And I'm getting better at it. I still have that outsider's view. It sort of lurks and it pops in from time to time. But I'm also now writing about Canadian themes with Canadian characters. And I'm trying to move away from that whole immigrant feeling, that immigrant approach. It was important to write about immigrants, and The Ulysses Man is all about immigrants. But having dealt with that subject, I'm now moving more into the mainstream writing of Canadian writing. So to answer your question, how long did it take me? It took me about, I think, a good 20 years before I felt really good about writing in Canada about Canada.
Wow. Because Ulysses Man, although set in Canada, like you say, has immigrant characters.
Yes.
And what is interesting is that your newest collection, Paradise Revisited, sort of reprises some of those characters. What made you decide to do that?
Yeah, that's true. I'm here, I'm talking about writing about Canadian themes in Canada, and I've gone back and written another immigrant collection. So let's put that one to bed. Paradise Revisited basically came as an offshoot from The Ulysses Man. It's the culmination of that whole subject. When I wrote The Ulysses Man, it was about one man over the last 40 years trying to find his home between Sri Lanka and Canada. And in the process of that, minor characters emerged. And I felt that I wouldn't have done justice to the immigrant theme and the immigrant story if I just focused on one man. So I took those other characters, not all of them, but some of them, and their situations. They were also, to some extent, immigrants. And I call these seven stories in Paradise Revisited. So you might find one or two of the characters from Ulysses Man in Paradise Revisited, and it's their story this time. And you may find totally unrelated characters, but working in the same time period with similar circumstances in Paradise Revisited. And what I tried to do was to show the transition from the immigrant who's about to leave, who hasn't really left the old country, to the guy who has just left or is in the process of leaving, to the guy who's left and who's stuck there and is trying to figure out what's that unfinished business I got to finish back in the old place before I can mentally move over, to the guy who's come here, done well, self-actualized, and is now saying, I got to go back and make a contribution in the old country. And my last story is about a chap who does that. but not realizing that, you know, the old country doesn't really need you. The old country has changed. They've got their own problems, and you have become a stranger, right? So that whole gamut of moving from before they leave to after they've left and come back, I think needs to be captured to cover the entire thing. And that's why I got into Paradise Revisited, and I felt that the short story is a very powerful way of getting the message across. The novel kind of rambles on, but the short story gets it right between the eyes, right? So that's why I came up with this. But I think with Paradise Revisited, I'm hoping, I mean, they always say never, that I'm done with the immigrant thing. I'm now moving on. But we'll never know.
Well, talking about the short version of writing, getting things right between the eyes, on an even shorter version, you also blog. That's a whole different scene altogether, is it not?
Yes, it is. And in fact, I'm finding that it is what people are looking for these days, because I've got quite a following on the blog scene. And my blog is now syndicated on other blog sites. And if I can believe the numbers of people reading them, then their numbers are quite high. And I think the blog is basically a page. It is nonfiction. So it is, you know, getting a message. It's a discussion. It's an opinion. And it's on topics that matter to us. And I find I kind of hover around 6 or 7 topics that are my pet topics. And I keep coming back to them in different angles with different new material. But I find that people respond to that. And it's a great way of building a platform and basically saying in a short way what you're trying to say with your novels and your short stories.
That's interesting. Well, let's hear from Paradise Revisited if we can.
Sure.
You have a reading for us today?
Sure. I can read. I read this the last time we were in Coburg, and it seemed to get some attention. So I thought I'll try this again. This is a story called Rebels of Lost Causes, and this is about two young men, one from the right side of the tracks, if you will, and one from the wrong side of the tracks, because the juxtaposition of wealth and poverty was quite close in that country, and in fact those are the circumstances that led to the revolution or the revolutions. And so this story is about the affluent young man who was probably in his late teens, reciting what happened at his house, and his servant boy, as they call him, is the antagonist, who subsequently in the story became a rebel and went and joined the revolution because they were fed up of the rich people having it their way. But this particular passage has got nothing to do with the two guys as much as it's got to do with this bull and a local yokel who was terrorizing the neighbors with his bull. So I'll read this one. The day that Bada's bull reversed course is etched in my mind like so many memories of my old home. Bada was a neighborhood farmer who operated a vegetable plot and had several cows. Although no one bought his fresh milk, there was always a thick brown residue inside the bottles of milk he peddled from door to door. In conformance to his name, Bada was a short, fat man who constantly chewed betel and spat red in all directions. Even when he talked, red spittle crept out of the corners of his mouth and dripped onto his faded white singlet that could never travel beyond his bulging gut. He also fancied himself with the ladies, even though no women in the neighborhood gave him a second glance. To attract attention, he ran his solitary bull along our narrow lane, a shortcut that connected the paddy field and his farm. The running of Bada's bull was a perilous activity. The half-fed black creature had two chipped horns and caked dung hugging its arse, and we wondered whether it ran only when provoked or to outrun the flies that hummed around its backside in a constant halo. Whenever Bada slapped the bull hard at the entrance to our lane, the creature bucked and kicked and headed straight up the narrow pathway for the farm, and everyone and everything in its path had to get out of the way. Children playing cricket were seen grabbing bats and wickets and jumping over fences. Ayahs ran screaming, hugging babies in their arms, and teenage boys used the opportunity to embrace their girlfriends in public for their safety. And Bada sauntered after his bull, looking from side to side for adulation, a satisfied look on his face. Most often, people stayed indoors until after Bada and the bull had returned to their abode. but the wily Buddha kept altering his entrance times just to liven up the show. The day the bull turned around, I was cramming for my final O-level exam on the front porch, anxiously looking forward to the holidays that were on the horizon. Sena was cutting down coconuts from the tree in our garden at the fence line. Of late, he had been seen up that tree whenever the bull ran. "Safe place, boss. Bloody bull can't climb trees." That day, in addition to the kris knife that Sena used to cut the coconuts, a catapult hung from his waist belt, along with a cloth bag with what I later found out was pebbles. I pushed my books away as the farmer and his bull entered the laneway. This was always an interesting sight, a temporary distraction from my studies. As the bull commenced its run, mercifully only old Mrs. Jayawardhana's servant was outdoors, and she ran scrambling for safety, Sena loosed a shot from his catapult. It hit the bull right between the eyes, slowing the animal's lumbering charge. Two other stones struck the bull in rapid succession, one hitting it near the eye, causing the animal to emit snorts and hisses of pain. The bull came to a standstill halfway up the lane and slowly turned on its heel when a coconut, launched from the tree, impaled itself on one of its horns, sending the animal into a mad charge in the opposite direction. Too late, Buddha saw his cash cow, or bull, running headlong at him. He spun around and wobbled as fast as his bow legs could carry him. The bull bumped him hard as it fled back to the safety of the paddy field. That nudge was enough to send Buddha skidding into the culvert at the edge of the road, where he lay moaning, cursing, and shouting for help. Suddenly all the doors and windows in the houses along our lane were full of people, looking, laughing, and jeering at the hapless man who was too short to get out of the hole. No one offered help. I saw Sena slide down the coconut tree and run to Buddha's aid. "Don't pull that stunt again," I heard him admonish the muddy, shivering, and groaning Buddha after hauling him out. "These are respectable people living here." Buddha hurled invective upon the boy and tried to chase after him. But with a skip and a laugh, Sena was scooting up the lane for the safety of our garden, which Buddha had no nerve to enter. And strangely enough, after that day, Buddha found an alternative route to take his bull home every day.
That was delightful. Thank you, Shane. I think we'll take a short break now.